Hey everybody, welcome to Sitting Around Talking Movies. Neil Rosen here, movie critic for New York One and Time Warner Cable, with Bill Bregoli.
Hey there.
And Bill McCuddy.
I'm sitting right next to you.
And I do this every week, so let me do it again and just tell you what you're listening to if this is your first time joining us.
Welcome.
We do a show every week called Talking Pictures on New York One and Time Warner Cable nationally, which talks about all those movies that are on demand, the hundreds of movies that are in your cable box. You're probably only familiar with several of the titles, but there's hundreds of movies that you probably don't know what they are. So we do this TV show where we tell you what's worth watching and what's not. And this is sort of, in many ways, the after show to that show, where we actually have more time to talk about those exact same movies. And
but wait, there's more. That's what happens basically with our show. I mean, we're you know, it's a half-hour show, but we were always in breaks going, wait, I should have said this or I could have added that. Now you get to hear the should have added this or can't wait to say that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you say that, McCuddy, because, yeah, I mean, we do this show and it's like, you know, I have an earpiece where the control room's always telling me, you only got a minute left, or you got a minute more.
It whizzes by, doesn't it? It just goes so quickly.
And there's so much we need to speak about.
As opposed to this right now, I mean, which feels like paint dry.
You watch the show. You watch a movie for 2 hours, and you know there's four of us on the show, and we each get maybe 30, 40 seconds to talk about the movie. But the movie that I want to start talking about today that's debuting on demand, as well as, I believe, is it in theaters as well, the Richard Gere movie?
Yeah, Time Out of Mind is in theaters, too.
Right, is Time
Limited
Out of
release. So as we sit here in New York, I always feel like we tell people, oh, it's in a theater near you, but the theater near you is in either New York or Los Angeles. So the theater closest to you is your remote control. So, yeah, it's in both at the same time, which is funny because, just a quick aside, the Richard Gere movie that did really well on VOD a couple of years ago was called Arbitrage, and it opened day and date, which is the term meaning, you know, the same day.
It was written by the same guy.
Yeah, Oren Moverman.
Is it by the same guy?
I think so, yeah.
Maybe not.
No, Arbitrage isn't. Sorry, no, Arbitrage is not.
So Richard Gere, right. But
that was a movie that opened day and date at the same time, and this is doing the same thing.
Well, that was one of the first movies that, like, people stood up and took notice of, like, look at all the business that it's getting on demand. Maybe
yeah,
we don't have to release.
Yeah, it made more money on demand. Talking about Arbitrage now, it made more money on demand than this. And, of course, if you've ever looked at Richard Gere, the first thing you've thought of is, man, wouldn't he make a great homeless guy? And so here we have Richard Gere as a homeless guy, which is so believable.
He almost fades away. You almost don't see him.
Almost is the key word, Bill, I think, because we talked about this on the show. I mean, I never got out of the fact that was a really good-looking man.
That's what my wife said.
Sometimes in a J.
Crew
catalog outfit. Some of the clothes he wore looked like he could have stepped out of Paul's
store. I don't agree with that. Do you agree with that, Bregoli?
No, I always knew it was Richard Gere, too, though.
I don't know. My wife kept saying, you know, he still looks great. And that was your comment, McCuddy. But I think that, you know, I bought him as the homeless guy. I did not think he looked glamorous. I mean, he had the stubble and he had some bags under his eyes. And, you know, I did not think he was
supposedly, while they were shooting this in New York, he, like, tried to panhandle and people walked right by him. It was pretty funny.
So here's a movie. Richard Gere plays a homeless guy. And you know, and he's, you know, and you see the deterioration. I mean, of his character as the movie progresses. But I found the movie to be kind of like a slog to sit through. I mean, as a examination of the bureaucracy of homelessness in New York and the red tape that somebody has to go through, it's well done in that regard. I mean, all the guy does is, you know, place that he wants to go to is a shelter, but after he can't, you know, they throw him out of the 7-Eleven, they throw him out of the waiting room at the bus station, wherever he's going, they're not letting him stay.
Hospital. It's a great scene at the hospital, too, where this one woman tells him that works there, all you have to do is say you're waiting for somebody, all you have to do is say you're sick, and then he goes back the second time and they kick him out. I mean, look, I know what you're going to say, that you thought it was hard to watch, but I think that I thought it did a really good job of putting us in that world where by the way, nothing really happens. I mean, you really, as somebody even in New York City and homeless, you walk around trying to decide where you're going to sleep that night, how you're going to eat, and
well, I think
that's not exciting by Hollywood standards.
Right. Well, I mean, it shows you the bureaucracy. I mean, as I said, all the guy wants to do is get a bed in the shelter, and he has to, like, go through 9 interviews and fill out questionnaires and answer questions, and it's like all the guy wants to do is go to sleep, and then he meets Ben Vereen. Ben Vereen's in it for a while, and There's also a subplot about him trying to reconnect with his estranged daughter, played by Jenna Malone. And none of those stories are really developed. I mean, there's no backstory on Richard Gere, and there's no backstory on, you know, like, why did he become homeless? What did he really do beforehand? You know, what happened with him and his daughter? It's really not explained. So, yes, as a document on what is it like to be homeless, I think it accomplishes that, and it's a, you know, admirable for, you know, noble intentions. But the narrative.
Didn't really say where they went to the bathroom. I've always wondered that about the homeless. Where do they go?
Well, I think that as a narrative, the dramatic. There's no dramatic arc in this. It's just 2 hours of just watching this guy.
I agree
roam
completely.
Around.
And I didn't really care. I mean, I thought it was a good performance.
Yeah, I kept comparing it to a comedy that I can't really talk about because it hasn't come out yet. The one with Robert De Niro.
Oh, we're going to talk about yeah, we're talking right. about
that next week.
Intern.
Which,
we're going to talk
also
about that.
Has,
I thought you were going to say Life Stinks, the no, Mel Brooks one.
Right,
about
no,
you saw
guy.
The Intern already?
I saw the Intern.
All right, save it for next
yeah,
week.
And, but I'll sneak this in. It kind of had no plot either.
Uh-huh.
So
interesting.
It was two completely different movies, but I had that no plot failing. Like, when's something going to happen? Something going to happen? When's something?
But the Intern, you would expect with Anne Hathaway and Robert De Niro to with a high concept movie where he plays an aide, you know, an old guy who goes and interns at her company, that you'd expect a plot in. This was more like Richard Gere gets plopped onto the streets in New York for 2 hours.
Yeah, and they don't even plop him on the street. It's a, you. The movie begins; he's already on the street.
Yeah, I thought that
and
was
you're just following
where
him
you keep
around.
Looking for a backstory feels really Hollywood to me.
I don't know. I was just.
It's not a great movie. I will agree with
I'm
you.
Saying
it's
it,
not a
it's,
great,
it,
great movie.
It's. I give the director credit for, like, you know, but I mean, to watch this movie for 2 hours, it was just kind of slow and boring. I'm not, you know, taking anything away from the guys, you know, bringing forth the, you know, the plight of the homeless and what that's like. And that's, you know, but does it make for a captivating dramatic arc? No. All right, let's move on. There's another new movie that is on demand this week called Cooties. Now, I saw this on demand, and I have to tell you, it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen, you know, that I've seen this year. It's a horror comedy, and it takes place, I would say they're junior high school kids?
They're supposed to be pre-puberty.
Okay.
Oh, that's right, because that's one of the conceits of the
right, that's
is
true,
that
okay.
Not going through puberty.
So there's this...
Whatever grade
so they're 10 or 11. I mean, these days that could be 5.
There's
I mean,
a there's,
so much
right. So there's
junk
a
in our milk and our chicken. And
elementary.
Stuff.
What's the name of the town? Something Chicken.
Chicken yeah, Fort
Fort
Chicken.
Chicken
Fort
Chicken,
Chicken
yeah.
is the name of the town, and something infects the food, and the kids.
Which is pretty gross and cool, actually.
And the opening credit sequence is kind of interesting. That's
and
the
Elijah Wood, who stars in it, was one of the producers.
Yeah.
But they show you how they process these chicken nugget things, and it's disgusting the
yeah,
way
you
it's
won't
like,
eat a nugget after this movie. Yeah, I went with my 15-year-old daughter, and she's not eating nuggets ever again.
So it's basically there's teachers in a school, and these kids turn into zombies after eating the cafeteria food. Predominantly, the chicken is infected with some virus, and they become killer zombies. And it's a horror comedy, and as a comedy, I found it.
I just love the way you went. And they become killer zombies. And blah, blah,
but
blah,
you know
blah,
how
blah.
Many zombie films there are these? I mean, it's yeah. like, yeah, another zombie film. So this one, the twist is that they're young kids. And right, and as you said, McCuddy.
This one is based on a true story.
Right. Right. It doesn't infect adults. Once you reach puberty, you can't be infected and become a zombie. But it's not funny. It doesn't work as a comedy. And it's not scary. And it doesn't work as a horror film. And Rainn Wilson's in it. And there's a running gag in that that's not funny, where he keeps mispronouncing a part of his truck. That's not funny. Elijah Wood looks like a deer caught in the headlights. And
well,
then
that's his character. Listen, I'm not
recommending
this movie. And then there's
Kevin, Jack McBrayer.
Yeah.
McBrayer. And he's doing Kevin from 30 Rock. Yeah. So, and as I said on the TV show today, I'll say it again here. I looked at the clock 40 minutes in. And I said, I cannot believe there's another 50 minutes left of this movie. I mean,
yeah, I felt pretty much the same way. And I'm tired of zombies, to
yeah.
be honest with you.
Now, I
both
like
of
Walking
you saw
Dead.
It on, both of you saw it on a link or on demand? Or,
yeah.
See, I had the advantage, if you'd call it that, and I'm not recommending this film, so let's just get that out of the way. I had the advantage of going with my daughter, who's 15, and sitting with about, I don't know, 30 critics. 20 or 30 critics.
Well, that's a tough crowd.
And there was some, yeah, usually, but there was there. We were laughing at this thing. So
tell me a point you were actually laughing at. Bill.
Some of the jokes are pretty funny.
Tell
me
a joke. Tell me one thing that made you laugh in this film. One. I'm not even asking you for a bunch.
No,
I'm asking
you're right.
for one
I mean, listen,
thing.
Listen, I said I started out by saying maybe I was one of the lemmings But it was contagious. We were laughing at some stuff. I can't remember any of the gags. And again, at home, unless you have like 30 or 40 people at home, this isn't going to work. Yeah. So but there is a great movie coming out this week.
Right. This is a movie that was, it's called Love and Mercy. And this was a movie that was released theatrically a few months ago and didn't really do that well at the box office. And here's a great opportunity to see it on demand. And it's the life of Brian Wilson, basically, who is, if you don't, that name doesn't ring a bell with you, and I'm sure it will ring a bell with a lot of people. He's the leader of the Beach Boys, the guy who wrote all the Beach Boys stuff. And Bill, you know, why don't you tell people what it's about?
People will know this film because I've been talking about it. I've been slipping it in every time we talk, either on the show or on this podcast. And it's basically two parts of the life of Brian Wilson. Early on in his career, when he's doing things like Good Vibrations and walking us through the tedious process to put that together and how the record label gave him money and time to do it and what he hit the genius that evolved out of that. And then a later period in his time, and again, we're in his brain, I feel, in both periods, when he's older and younger, he's played by Paul Dano, and older, he's played by John Cusack. And usually those multiple people in one role is terrible, but it worked for a Bob Dylan movie a few years ago, and I think it works like gangbusters for this film. And I think welcome back John Cusack, because he's great in it and hasn't been great for a long time. And Paul Giamatti is kind of the Svengali guy, is the manager sort of doctor who allegedly gets Cusack back on the road.
He's a monster.
He's a monster, but Pet Sounds gets done, some other things get done, and he does start to make some money. He meets Elizabeth Banks at a car dealership. They become romantically involved, and it jumps back and forth in the two time periods, and I can't recommend this film
enough.
What do
you think of it?
Actually, I have sort of a personal connection to this movie because I met Brian Wilson.
Really?
In the 90s. He came to the station I was working at in Boston, WBCN.
Early 90s? Mid-90s?
Early 90s. That was probably around 92.
You remember it with Brian?
Would
Brian remember your meeting?
No, not at all. In fact, he needed to find out where the men's room was, so I let him out of the studio, brought him to the men's room, and I realized when I had him in the hallway that he probably, even though the men's room was directly across the hallway from the studio, that he probably wouldn't be able to find his way back.
Yeah.
So I pretended that I also had to use the bathroom.
Wow.
And pretended to pee as Brian Wilson peed in the stall next to me.
Really?
It doesn't get any worse than this. But I had to lead him back out. He was very friendly and very nice and very gentle. But you looked in his eyes and you thought, this is where Brian Wilson used to live. So watching the film was kind of letting me see all that background.
That's a great
line. Before I even tell you, and I agree with you, I thought the film was really, really good. It struck me when you ever see any kind of biopic on rock stars or even just documentaries on rock stars, this guy, I mean, aside from his mental illness, he did not have you said gentle, he was not this cool. He was a very kind, people like Mike Love in the movie criticizes that he's going in this more avant-garde direction, experimental direction. And he's like, oh, Gina, he's not like yelling at anybody. He's just this quiet, he's not this ego-typical rock star kind of, attitude. But what I really liked about the film is, first of all, I'm not a big fan of Paul Dano to begin with. And I thought Paul Dano was great in this. First of all, he gained some weight, and the resemblance to Brian Wilson was uncanny. I thought it was terrific.
Ruby Sparks.
Excuse me. And then the obsessiveness that Brian Wilson had in the studio with the Wrecking Crew, that was the studio musicians who did all the music for the Beach Boy tracks, which there's a very good documentary called The Wrecking Crew. Wasn't Glenn Campbell one of the members of the Wrecking Crew?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then there was, like the way he isolates like a bass track, and they show you like for 2 hours he just wants to get this exact note right. And you recognize that that's the bass track on Good Vibrations, if you're familiar with the song. And I thought that the movie did such a great job. This guy, Bill Poland, who directed it, did such a great job of showing you the process of creating these songs that we all know.
And the Beach Boys are such bubblegum, I think people will be really, really shocked at... And I'm sorry, there are Beach Boy fans out there who will say,
well,
Pet Sounds is not bubblegum. But they were easily... sort of manipulated into this California Dreamin' kind of sound that made it easy to dismiss them as musicians, I think. And that's not true. Brian Wilson is a genius, and you get into his head, as I said earlier. But
Rolling Stone magazine, I don't know if you know this or not, not that I pay any attention or put any credibility into lists, but they listed the 100 or 500 greatest rock albums of all time. And number one was the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Right.
And number two was Pet Sounds. That apparently was very influential.
Which, by the way, I've never heard a note of.
Really?
Have you guys heard Pet Sounds?
You know the songs. You just don't know that they're on Pet
really?
Sounds.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I thought they were obscure on
No, you just would... don't know that you just don't know that those songs are on Pet Sounds. But the thing is, you said California Dream, and that's really Mamas and the Papas.
I meant that atmosphere of
it's
California.
This Surf City USA, fun, you know, all that stuff. That was the early Beach Boys, and they even say in the movie, Paul Dano goes, he's not going backwards, he's going forwards. And, you know, and I liked the fact that as opposed to a linear biopic, you know, I liked the fact that it was Cusack, who looks nothing like Brian Wilson, but it was innovative, it was different. It was like, here he is in his later years.
Non-traditional biopic.
And Elizabeth Banks is this Cadillac salesman who's trying to get him away from this monstrous Paul Giamatti Svengali character who's controlling every move of Brian Wilson's life. And I thought that was interesting. And I thought the whole creative process in the beginning with Paul Dano was interesting. Another note, and McCutty and I were talking about this on the phone actually yesterday, is there was I don't know if you remember, Brigoli, there was a made-for-TV ABC movie years ago about the Beach Boys, and they show you all the early years, like the father, who's also monstrous, right. And he's almost practically deaf in one ear, Brian Wilson, because his father was always hitting him, and he was like this tyrant guy. This made-for-TV movie, they showed you how, you know, they were kids. The father knew how to get a record contract. The father knew how to... So the movie doesn't really have that, but having known that background, I found it a very interesting film.
Well, they fire their father in this movie, too. So they deal with some of it, but yeah,
Some of it. But I like the movie very, very much. And if you like the Beach Boys, or even if you aren't a fan of the Beach Boys, but you're just familiar with the music, I think you'll find it very, very interesting.
So if Brian Wilson was to wander onto a late-night television show, what would they make of him? What would today's audiences, and I know we're going to talk about Colbert and some of what's going on that landscape. I just think the guy, I had the opportunity to interview him, you know, like 15 years ago, and he just wasn't there.
You interviewed Brian Wilson?
Yeah, sure.
When you were on Fox?
Yeah, on Fox News Channel.
What was that interview like?
Well, it was disjointed. It was difficult. He didn't really know where he was and who I was, which I was very offended by. No, we were both right there on TV, but he didn't seem to think we were on television. We had an anchor by the name of Brian Wilson from D.C., and he came on the show with us, and that was a mistake. I thought that was going to be funny, and Brian Wilson didn't know who Brian Wilson was, and he became very confused that there were two Brian Wilsons.
So
if we have put him in late night TV, you know, I think
I'm going to talk about.
Let's talk about that because that's.
You want to talk about Colbert?
I wanted
to talk about one other new movie that's on demand first, and then go to Colbert.
Tell me about the new movie.
Well, I want to talk about this movie called Age of Adeline, which is another theatrical release. That kind of came and went at the box office.
Well, it was actually my critics' pick this week because it's been overlooked by audiences and critics, I thought.
Right. So when we do the television show, we all pick a movie. They're called critics' picks, and Bill McCutty's movie was Age of Adeline. So, you know, it's an interesting premise. You know, this in 1908, this girl is born. Her name is Adeline. And at 29, she gets into some kind of car accident. And for a supernatural forces that really are not explained well in the movie, lightning strikes, she's underwater after the car accident, the moon, something happens with the moon.
I'm pretty sure it has something to do with Scientology, although they never mentioned that.
She doesn't age. She doesn't age for, you know, since the age of 29. So she's lived through...
She's like a Gabor sister.
World War I and, World War II and, you know, and she's run, you know, they want to, she changes her identity every 10 years because
right.
she's afraid.
Because cops pull her over. And,
and they want to, like, lock her up and study her as a human specimen.
Right.
So, you know, I think the premise was very interesting, but I thought the execution could have been a lot better. I think they wasted the premise. The movie gets interesting to me when Harrison Ford shows up, and he's her old lover, and he goes, "Wait a minute! I know this girl looks exactly like this woman that I used to date." Like,
and 50 oh, by the way,
ago.
My son is now dating her, so we may have something in common, son. But I don't really want to mention and that because it's too creepy.
Yeah, that pulls me into that movie. But that's an hour into the movie. Harrison Ford doesn't show up till an hour into the movie, and if you added up the screen time, maybe he's in there 15 minutes total. The romance that she has with the son, played by this guy,
Huseman or something.
Yeah, as I said, that's just plain creepy. Doesn't matter his name. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did see it, and I thought it was strange with the relationship with her daughter.
Yeah, well, that's what's cool. Ellen Burstyn, who's
that
daughter,
I kind of like. You see the daughter as a young daughter. Yeah. Then you see them at the same age, and they're going out for like coffee together. Then you see her; she's an old lady played by Ellen Burstyn.
But you've buried the whole lead here, Neil, because we haven't mentioned that it's the unbelievably gorgeous Blake Lively that plays the lead, and I think that you know, she was in The Town, I think, and she's done a couple of things, but she's also been not memorable.
Gossip Girl
and a couple
is
of
her,
other things.
Her,
yeah. But she really brings it to this performance, I think. And
she's very good. Harrison Ford isn't phoning it in. He's very good. But, you know, I'm mixed on it. It's okay. If you like romances, it's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay. You know, I think it comes alive when Harrison Ford's on the screen. But
you know where I'd like to see her, Blake Lively?
On the Colbert Report.
Yeah, probably. Not well, Report. See, you're
late
stuck
show,
in there.
The Late Show with
We're
Stephen
all doing
Colbert.
The same thing.
Well, here's the thing. You know, people that have followed me on television for quite a number of years will know that I love the Colbert Report when it was on Comedy Central. I think that that was one of the greatest television characters literally ever created in the history of TV. And for him to walk away from
better
that,
than Ralph Cramden.
You know, yeah, it's like Ralph, it's like Jackie Gleason going, "I'm not doing Ralph Cramden anymore. Forget these honeymooners."
Better than Fred Flintstone.
Yeah, it's just somebody.
Better than Don Draper.
It's just somebody just giving up their signature. Jack Benny, I've had it playing this cheapskate guy. You know what I mean? Or, you know, Seinfeld. I'm not going to be an observational comic.
I don't know about the greatest on television.
I said one of the greatest.
I will agree.
So
with
now
that.
He's doing. I mean,
he got so much mileage out of something that should have been a one season idea.
But it became more brilliant as it went along. And the fact that he was playing this conservative pundit, taking the original concept being, you know, I'm going to be like this O'Reilly times 10, but being in the guise of a Republican, you know, right-wing guy, you know, he could just get away with so much. An interview, he used to tell his guests before they came on, "The character I play is an idiot, just kind of go with it." That's what he told all the guests before
so
they came on.
So what do we think of the character he's playing now?
Well, now he's playing him. Well, you had the best line. You said, what did you say to me? You said, he's playing him. But
yeah, well, I think we want to know whether we like this guy, and so far I don't really like him. I mean, he's okay, but he's sort of like a Dungeons and Dragons nerd that got his own late-night show. And I think it fits perfectly into
That's
James
funny.
Corden. If you're CBS, you're going, oh, this is sort of an older version of the same guy. They're both very talented. They can sing. They can dance. They can do just about anything. But I'm not sure. I was extremely uncomfortable, and I took a lot of heat for it on Twitter and on other social media platforms when I said that I really was uncomfortable with his Joe Biden interview on the third night. You know, they talked about his dead son and Colbert's dead father.
That went on forever, man.
God may be an important part of their lives, which I respect completely, but, you know, you're trying to make like a comedy variety talk show, and this thing, it became very clear that Colbert is a huge fan of Biden, and I thought that was inappropriate on the third night out.
I didn't mind that. Listen, I would rather, you know, I give credit to the fact that, you know, first of all, I have to get out of the mindset that this isn't the Colbert Report, and as I just said
Absolutely.
A few minutes ago, that was so brilliant to me. I mean, I spoke to Colbert actually a few months ago at the CBS Upfronts. The Upfronts are when the networks talk to their advertisers. And I said, how are you going to give up great bits like Cheating Death with Stephen Colbert, Alpha Dog of the Week, all these unbelievable bits? And he goes, listen, I created all those things. I'm going to create other things. And I said, well, I hope it's great. He goes, you and me too, brother. So, you know, so is it great?
Which is almost identical to what Conan told NBC. I mean, NBC owned all of that intellectual property, and he had to go and create a new show, and he said he was probably better for it.
Yeah, but anyway. Viacom owns Comedy Central, and Viacom owns CBS. So he could use some of that stuff. So I would rather see, I mean, he had Elon Musk, he had the CEO of Uber on. He had on
both of whom, by the way, were uncomfortable in the interviews. I felt
Tim
Elon
Cook.
Musk and the Uber guy were both like, "Wait a minute, where are you taking this?"
So I'd rather see those kind of guests. It's refreshing as opposed to your typical every other talk show having, you know, one of the Kardashians on, be it Seth Meyers or be it Jimmy Fallon or be
Agreed.
It Jimmy Kimmel or be it you know, even James Corden. I'd rather see these kind of guests, but you know, it's not. I find that, you know, he comes out, he does a monologue. It's a little awkward. By the way, I'm going to reserve judgment on all of this. I'm going to give the guy a month before I really, you know, have my solidified opinion.
Really? So the, should we rewind now?
No, no. But I'm just saying, I'm giving my initial impressions. But I'm saying even the Colbert Report had to find its footing the first few weeks. I thought, like, well, you know, I don't know how. Like you said, McCuddy, how, you know, it was a one note thing.
Even if I don't like him or do like him, I also think some of the comedy bits he's doing, where he puts a Nordic hat on and predicts the future or the past or whatever that was the other night, and then laying with Scarlett Johansson and looking at the sky in a bit he calls, I don't know, something the stars, look at
yeah,
the stars.
Man,
was that deadly. Come on.
Well, I don't know.
Wait, you liked that. Say you liked it.
I didn't like it, but I didn't hate it. I thought it was okay. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, these are watered down. The part that I like of the show is after he does the monologue, which is a little awkward, he sits at the desk. And
which is, by the way, something everybody's doing late night now because they all came from behind the desk jobs.
Look
at Seth Meyers doesn't
really do monologues. Corden
doesn't. They do like two jokes and then go sit down where they're comfortable.
But his behind the desk piece is, to me, is more reminiscent of the Colbert Report than anything else that he does on the show. It's political. He's been taking a lot of jabs at Trump, who will be a guest on the show coming up. And that's okay. The show not. Two nights ago when Emily Blunt was on, I thought was – I guess – look, I want the Colbert Report. I guess I got to get over the fact that that's not what this is going to be. But the guy is brilliant, and I'm going to give the – I'm going to – let's readdress this in a month from now.
I just want to say before we leave this topic that Trump did go on Fallon. Fallon was great with him.
Right. He did
it was funny.
He did the Lucy –
the man in the mirror thing.
He did the Lucy Harper Marx thing. Yeah.
And, yeah, it was great. And, you know, I only wish Colbert as well, but I just haven't seen it yet.
My problem with the show is it doesn't seem to be anything that isn't planned out in advance. There's no spontaneity. That's my problem with the show. Everything seems so planned.
Well,
that's why I like, even though they haven't been all that interesting, the non-famous people interviews have at least, I'm thinking, well, maybe something that they didn't, some bit. Like, the Clooney thing just killed me. The Clooney thing.
That was terrible.
The first night
was bad.
Terrible.
Yeah. By the way, they overshot that show by half an hour, and they've been doing it every night, and they've
an
been
hour.
Cutting it down, and the edits are extremely obvious to
They're
me.
They're still overshooting it?
Yeah, as far as I know, because they like to have extra material to show.
Well, he keeps saying, go to ColbertLateShow.com to see the full interview, and I go there, and I can't find the full interview. So either it's buried in the site somewhere, or it's a very poorly designed site, because I've actually gone to look at the interview, and I can't find the interview.
You need a social media person who's like right behind you at all times.
That's right.
We have a
social media guy by the name of Kai who's going to help us get more listeners to this show, as I said last week.
Well, I wouldn't put it that way. It makes us sound like we don't have.
Well, if you like it. Listen, before we go.
Amongst a throng, I would say to our audience, but we want that throng to grow.
Before we go, there's a film festival that's going on right now, Bill.
Yeah, well, we're in the middle of a couple. I mean, what's happening in Toronto right now is, you know, we're getting first looks at some of the biggest films of the year, and there have been some hits and misses, and I'm really looking forward to seeing Carol with Cate Blanchett, because I hear that that's amazing.
What is that about?
It's basically a lesbian romance between she and Rooney Mara.
Rooney Mara, yeah.
Yeah, Rooney Mara.
And it's done by the guy with the dragon tattoo.
Yeah.
Girl, in case anybody
doesn't
know
what her tattoos are in this one, but I can't wait to see.
Are they going to make the second one of those?
That hasn't happened. I don't really know.
I know, you know.
A year ago, that was written about in the trades, and nobody could get David Fincher to say anything.
We're talking about the trilogy that was made.
Well, they have made it. I think it was
Swedish.
Right. Swedish version.
Swedish
they made
version.
All three.
Now there
of
are
them.
New books by a different author coming out in Sweden.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know what I'm hearing great buzz about before we go is The Martian, which I'm dying to
see.
We're going to
talk
Ridley
about
Scott.
That in 2 weeks on this podcast. Right. And the trailer, go look at the trailer
Matt
of The
Damon
Martian.
Alone on Mars.
Damon. They think he's dead. I'm not giving anything away. This is the trailer. He goes to Mars, and they think that the spacecraft exploded, and then he's like, I'm alive, I'm alone, I'm alone.
It's funny. It looks like it's, yeah.
And one of our colleagues who did the show today, Chris Najewadi from Entertainment Weekly, saw it, and he said it's terrific.
Right.
So I'm really looking forward to that. And
drop those names like Chris Najewadi a lot in the show, right? Social media guy? Yeah.
He's talking to Kai, the social media guy. Kai, the social media guy. All right. And
We'll talk about that. We also have the New York Film Festival, which we're all accredited for, I think, and can report back on. And so that'll be kind of fun. And
next week we're going to talk about The Intern. We're all going to go see The Intern.
Now, I've seen The Intern. And have you seen Black Mass?
No. How was that? Tell us about that. The Johnny Depp movie replaced Whitey Bulger.
Right. Well, again, I draw from personal experience. I'm doing that a lot on the show. But I grew up,
man, in Boston.
I had drinks with one of Whitey's underlings once.
Wow. You buried the lead. We're 30 minutes into the show,
I
got this.
Still drank with a guy named Punchy, who's not in the movie, by the way.
Who was he just a Punchy drunk?
He was. He had a cauliflower ear. Or I've never seen a cauliflower ear before. He was a former boxer who had gone to prison for robbing a bank, and he wound up at a bar that I was at. And we'll talk about that another time.
Well, wait, I just want to ask one thing. You grew up in Boston?
I grew up.
So does it get Boston right?
It does a very good job.
And did you see the Whitey documentary that was out about 6 months ago?
Yeah, I like this a little better, actually.
Okay, great.
So how's Johnny Depp?
Johnny Depp is great.
Is he as good as he was, let's say, in Blow? I really like that performance where he plays
I think he is. He's downright scary in it. He's not friendly, and he doesn't overdo it like he does with his
And he's comfortable
captain.
Without mascara and a bandana?
Yeah, but he has tons of prosthetics to hide underneath.
Right.
And is it the whole White? Is it like Whitey Bulger from like a young guy all the way up?
No, it's actually Whitey Bulger 10 years out of Alcatraz, and he's doing a deal. It's mostly centers around the deal that he does with a guy named John Connolly of the FBI.
Well, and this is such a good tease that you've given us the whole story.
Okay.
But I'm sure we'll revisit it again when you and I
when you guys have seen it, we'll discuss. I'll tell you more what I thought about it. But it does not.
Did I drop my microphone?
No, you're wearing it.
Oh, I have it.
All right. Calm down.
You want to say? So this is Kai. Kai goes to high school, and Kai's going to be doing our social media
crap. Suddenly, we're.
You want to say hello? You want to say hello, Kai?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, you could talk into this microphone that's on.
Well, that's a little uncomfortable. It's on your.
Okay.
It's on your tie. You're asking the man to speak into your tie.
All right. Well, this is fun. Okay, and it
is. Here we go.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, grab it.
This is what Bill has a microphone with Kai, and it's there you go. So. Hi, just say hello.
Hello.
Okay, there you go. Now you now Kai's
I'm
met
on
you.
A podcast, right?
This would be incentive.
We promised you special guests.
That's
we
right.
We said we'd get some of the biggest names in the business.
Right.
Until then,
right.
We have Kai.
Right. Next week, it'll be Brad Pitt. This week, it's Kai, the social media guy. There you go. And anyway, so next week, we're going to talk about the De Niro film, Anne Hathaway film, The Intern. We're going to talk about other Anne Hathaway and De Niro films that are available on demand.
Right.
We're going to talk about a movie called Ashby that comes out day and date, as they say, that opens up in theaters and also opens up in on demand at the same time.
And a great, great documentary about the founding of National Lampoon.
And which I saw, which is phenomenal. We'll talk about it next week.
A magazine one of us has written for.
That's
we'll
right.
Reveal who that
who
is.
Who wrote for National Lampoon a few times? Some very funny parodies. Well, we'll tell you that next time. So until next time, you've been sitting around talking movies, and I guess sitting around talking about TV today too, right?
Yeah, and sitting around talking social media.
All right. So for Bill,
Kai, the social
media. So for Bill Bregoli, Bill McCuddy, I'm Neil Rosen, and Kai, the who said hello, the social media guy.
That was our drinking game name, by the way. Kai. Every time you heard Kai, you were supposed to have a drink.
All right. Well, there you go. Anyway, we'll see you next week on hopefully on sitting around talking movies. Bye.